Do you want your middle school girl to grow into a strong, confident, and resilient young adult? So do I. The only thing is, middle school's hard for both kids and parents. Welcome to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. I'm Janice Scholl, and I'm just a regular parent on a mission to uncover the best tips and advice for raising middle school girls. You know how great your middle school girl is, and you tell her all the time. So why doesn't she believe you? In today's episode, I talk with award-winning author, nurse practitioner, and teen confidence expert, Jackie Latran. We talk about the limiting beliefs our girls hold, how they develop, and what we can do to help them grow beyond them. Spoiler alert, this work isn't just for our teens. Hi, Jackie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on today.
So you are a teen confidence coach, and you have a number of really awesome books and workbooks that go with them to help our teens. We've had a lot of guests lately talk about parent communication with our teens and tweens, which is so important, but we haven't really talked about the communication our teens are having within themselves. And that's what I'm so excited to talk to you about today.
I cannot wait. This is a topic I'm super passionate about. And you're right. It's not very well, you know, people don't talk about this particular aspect a lot, but it is incredibly important and super key to really understanding the teens and the tweens and ourselves for that matter.
Yes. Right. I mean, I think I was an adult. I know I was an adult when the concept of inner dialogue and beliefs and stuff really like was understood by me. And so if we can equip our kids sooner to understand how the lenses they look through and what they're saying to themselves, I just think that we're going to set them up for better success.
I completely agree with you.
To get started, could you just tell us a little bit about the work you do and how you came to this place?
Sure. So going way back a little bit, just for perspective, is I was a nurse practitioner at 23 years old. And I became a nurse practitioner out of my own challenge of being a teen mom. I went through all of that. I knew how uncomfortable and, you know, all the baggages that came with that. So I wanted to be a resource for other teens. And at 23, I became a nurse practitioner and went straight into adolescent health after a couple years doing general medical so I can have a more grounded background. And as I'm working with these teens, I'm realizing, you know, I'm working on their health aspect. I worked a lot with mental health and I work a lot with reproductive health, but the mental health aspect was missing quite a bit. And I didn't realize that until like 10 years into my practice, because what I started hearing from my patients was things like, you know, if I didn't have depression, I could do that. My anxiety takes over and, you know, I can't do anything. And I'm not as good as this person or that person, or I have to be on these medications for the rest of my life for the next X amount of years. And those things that they were saying and the thoughts they were having were incredibly disempowering. But I didn't understand that whole mindset bit either. I was in my 30s at this point, but I got curious. And the more I got curious, the more I learned about alternative healthcare, the more I realized, you know what, my heart and my passion is no longer in medicine. It's in really helping people understand themselves so that they can take charge of themselves through mindset retraining. And so I went for more and more courses, you know, everything that I was interested in. I studied from 2-3 teachers because, again, I want to know what people think. And from every one of my teachers, I get something from them that I'm like, oh my God, that is it. But I might not have a buy-in to the whole process. And as I'm putting all these together, I realize I have a really powerful system that can help people to understand themselves so much better so that they can have better relationships with other people, better relationship with money, with success, with anything it is in life that they want to achieve.
In the world that we live in today, access to mental health care is even harder than it was, I think, 10 and 15 years ago, with so many of our teens experiencing depression and anxiety and increasing rates. And that was before the pandemic. And now we layer on the impact of being a teen through those years and the lack of socialization and academic pressures. It's even more important to have mental health support and education. And what I like so much about what you're doing is that we're not talking about treating anxiety. We're talking about training your brain so that we can teach our teens and us parents, because we need this as well, let's be honest. But we're talking about what we can do to empower ourselves, not to need an external solution, at least sometimes.
Right, right. And you know, what I love about the work that I do is that it's really about setting people up with a really solid foundation. Because unfortunately, a lot of the treatment options out there are Band-Aids, right? I apologize for anybody who this might offend, but one of the reasons I moved away from medicine and prescribing medicine was that it was more of a Band-Aid approach. You have these symptoms here, take these pills, they'll take the edge off, and they do help. But the original problem is still there unless you retrain your mind to view that situation differently, unless you retrain your mind to have better resources. You're going to go back to it. So a lot of people who have these diagnoses, they take medication, they feel better, and then something bigger hits them and they're back to square one. Worse yet, they're worse off than square one. They went back a little bit further because now they have this incredibly strong disempowering belief of something is wrong with me. These medications were supposed to help me, and look at me. I was better for a little bit, and the first thing that hit me, I'm back here. What's wrong with me? All those self-judgment push people back from being their best selves. So in the work that I do, I really help people to understand, okay, those experiences you went through, the beliefs that you hold about them, what if you were wrong? What if you look at those situations and tell yourself that you are weak for not being able to handle that thing? But in fact, you are incredibly strong. You are incredibly strong because you are still standing. You're still getting out of bed every single day. You're still doing the things you need to do. They might be challenging, but you're still doing it. That takes a lot of guts, takes a lot of strength. But people don't give themselves that kind of credit. And so in the mindset retraining, it's really about helping people, again, to understand the blocks that they developed and how to start dismantling those blocks so that they can see they're beautiful in their strength. All the wonderful qualities that make them uniquely them, you know, and people forget once we have a couple stories, painful stories piled up, all we see is the pain. We forget the person behind all of that because that person is still there.
What you're saying right now is hitting me really hard. So I hear you, and it happens even when us parents have the best intentions and we're trying to do the right things. And what you're talking about is really the kids themselves being able to address and question what they believe, right?
Yes. So in my best-selling book, I would, but my damn mind won't let me. I talk really about this. And this is the basis of my work. And I feel like if people really understand just the super simple concept, life become a lot easier. So would it be okay if I share a little bit about the book right now?
I'd love you to. And, you know, we love super simple concepts that solve really big problems.
That's how I work. I simplify everything. I might oversimplify, but that's how my brain works. And that's how I get results. So no matter what issue that you're dealing with, you know, whether it's obesity, whether it's anxiety, whether it's a performance issue, anything, it boils down to only four disempowering beliefs. One or multiple of four disempowering beliefs. So imagine through your life experiences, and especially through your life experiences as a child before 7 years old, because our mind isn't fully functional at that point, and we can go deeper if you want. But through significant emotional events during that time, people create four disempowering beliefs that will run in the background of their mind for the rest of their lives. So we all have this. Every one of us on earth have these four. And they might come up at different times, and they might be more severe for one person than another. But the four disempowering beliefs that cause every single problem on earth practically is a belief of I'm not enough, a belief of I'm not worthy, a belief of I'm not safe, and a belief that I'm not loved or I'm not lovable. So let's say, you know, little Susie had a traumatic event, on the playground when she was in kindergarten. She and her best friend were playing, and then the best friend somehow turned on her and start making fun of her because there's a new girl in town, and you know the best friend kind of wanted to hang out with the new girl. So little Susie's left here by herself feeling unloved, wondering what was wrong with her, wondering why she was not worthy of a friendship or of that current friendship. So when you experience a significant emotional event like that, your subconscious mind, which is the part of your mind that runs on autopilot, that's all where all the bad programs and some really amazing programs are stored, but the subconscious mind takes over and it creates a belief system and it creates a coping strategy. Because your subconscious mind's job is to protect you, make sure that you don't experience pain. And here's little Susie on the playground, totally devastated because her best friend just left her and is now making fun of her. So in those moments, little Susie can create all of these beliefs. Now, once you create a belief system like that, it stays with you for the rest of your life, and your subconscious mind is constantly looking for evidence to support that belief. It wants to protect you, so it's hyper aware for anything that sort of kind of look like that, so that it can step in and intervene on your behalf. Unfortunately, the way the subconscious mind intervene on your behalf is using scare tactics, right? It reminds you of that painful event. It projects a future similar painful event. It creates all of these fear and doubts within you so that you don't go forward with whatever it is that you're doing that puts yourself at risk. So the next time little Susie, you know, wants to go up and talk to this other friend, for example, or a new girl, she's all excited because here's an opportunity to make a new friend. And then her subconscious mind kicks in. Remember how much it hurt when your best friend rejected you in the playground. Who do you think you are to deserve this new friendship? Nobody's going to like you. And those are thoughts that are running in the background of your mind. You might not hear it. You might not be very aware of it. All you know is that you're very uncomfortable. And if you're very uncomfortable, chances are you're going to back off. You're going to like, maybe I'll do that tomorrow, right? Maybe I'll talk to her tomorrow. And when that happens, your subconscious mind is going to go, aha, I know how to stop her in the future. Just play that same tape. So next time little Susie wants to go do something, that tapes pop up. It doesn't even have to be a friend anymore. Now she wants to go try out for the basketball team or something. Same tape pops up. Nobody likes you. You're not going to make it. You're not good enough. Who do you think you are? And those are the thoughts that are always there for all of us. Again, in different degrees at different times, but we all have those kind of thoughts that hold us back. So when we're talking to our children and we're like, little Susie, you are amazing. You are the best daughter I could ever hope for. And look at all these things that you've accomplished. I'm so proud of you. Little Susie cannot hear you. Because her belief is I'm not good enough and people don't like me. One way to look at that is imagine once you have a belief system, you kind of wear a goggle and you look through your life through that lens. And if your lens is I'm not good enough, no matter how many times people tell you you're amazing, you're either not going to hear it or you're going to hear it and feel incredibly uncomfortable or you're going to hear it and wonder what's their angle. Right? What are they trying to do or get out of you? You always have that question mark. And that's why a lot of parents with the best of intention cannot connect to their children the way they want to and support them in a way that the child can feel supported and heard.
Wow.
I said a lot.
It makes perfect sense. And as an adult, like we all know that moment where somebody is paying you a compliment and saying something nice to you and you're questioning it, right? Like, but yet we just expect and believe that our kids should believe what we tell them when we're telling them something positive, right? Like, you're doing so good at this. We are so proud of you. It's like we just don't recognize, I think, that they have this belief system set up as well, just like we do. I had no idea that it starts so young or that it's established so young. So, and the example you gave, it doesn't have to be difficult family experiences. It can be playground. It can be normal challenges that everyday kids experience. And it's just, it sounds like it's really just the way that we process what happened that results in these long-term belief systems.
Yes, 100%. So it's called significant emotional event. So it doesn't have to be, you know, big significant for everybody. It has to be significant to that individual. in that moment, right? I mean, I work with a lot of adult clients and teen clients, but some of my adult clients, when we trace back to the origin of their problem, they usually look at me like, you gotta be kidding me. That thing is what's been holding me back this whole time. Because that little incident is with little Susie don't go around thinking about it for the rest of her life, but the tape is there.
Yeah.
Once the tape is there, her subconscious might start collecting evidence to match that particular belief, and it just gets stronger and stronger. And that's why people with anxiety, they, when you ask them, what are you so anxious about? What are you so worried about? They don't know. They don't know. They just know it doesn't feel right. Their heart is racing. Their pupils dilated. They're sweating. They want to get out of there. You know, their mind is going a million miles because all of those tapes are like popping all the way, you know, all around them, right? And so if you recognize that, if you are willing to just believe, just suspend belief for a moment and say, okay, the problem that your child is having, the problem you're having, it stem from one of the four beliefs or multiple of these four, and you work on building up Susie's belief that she is worthy, that she is loved, that she is safe, that she is enough, what will happen? You don't have to go and address every single symptom that little Susie's experiencing if you work on the foundation. And that's why I love doing what I work is we go straight down to that foundation and we build you right back up. And not really, that's the wrong way to say it. We're not building you back up. I help my client remember their truth. Because the truth is we are all amazing. We all have our strengths. We all have our non-strengths. But we forget. And once we have those negative stories, that's all we can focus on. And I heard the best way to explain it, and I want to share because I just love it so much. I share this with all of my clients and they look at me like, that makes sense. So think about our body, right? Our body most of the time is in perfect health. Everything is, you know, for the most part, right? It's doing pretty well. Even if you have health issues, your body's doing really great. And then you have a paper cut. And all you can focus on is that teeny tiny little paper cut where the rest of your body's doing pretty darn well. But you can't think of anything else but that darn paper cut. That's how we are emotionally. When something happened that's painful, that's all we can focus on.
That is a really great analogy. Like you can get it. That paper cut can be so annoying. It is the focus of your attention. What do we do? Because you did say that these belief systems are established, you know, by the age of 7 and they stay with us for life. So it's something that's normal for us to have beliefs that are not necessarily serving us well, but how do we improve from there?
Well, the quickest way to improve from there, of course, is to work with somebody who is trained to work on subconscious beliefs. Now, I know not everybody could do that. The next second best is giving yourself knowledge. Learn, whether through podcasts like yours, whether through reading books or webinars. There's so much resources available out there. If you're willing to spend a little bit of time and effort going through the training, you can learn quite a bit about yourself. But making it a little bit simpler is first recognizing that those beliefs that we hold about ourselves, they are wrong. They are a teeny tiny little snippet of something that happened way back when we didn't have the frame of references, the experience, the knowledge to really make sense of that particular incident, right? So we're basically, no matter how old you are, you're still, I'm little Jackie inside. My subconscious mind is a 3-year-old Jackie or a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old Jackie. And I still react from that perspective. That's that knee-jerk reaction. You have to be willing to pause. You have to be willing to pause and question some of those beliefs that you have. You know, something happens and you immediately jump to the, oh, who am I to do this thing? Well, who am I to not do this thing? Right? Ask yourself those kind of questions. Challenge yourself. Who says I'm not good enough? And if you know, for some people, they might be able to come up with 20 people who told them they're not good enough. Now, go one step deeper. Who are they to tell me I'm not good enough? Because if you really think about it, a person who is mentally, emotionally healthy, they look at you and they see you struggling. They're not going to say, hey, you're not good enough. They're going to say, hey, let me help. Hey, is there something I can do? I love that you did that thing. You know, they're going to help you see your strength. They're going to build you up. The people who break you down, there's something not healthy about them to begin with. So are you going to let what they say, something, someone who's not so healthy, say about you, determine the outcome of your life?
Yeah. And I think that message is so powerful to middle school girls, right? Because a lot of our middle school girls do hurt others. And not because they're bad kids, not because they're bad people, but because they're trying to process things themselves. They're trying to make sense of things themselves. So sometimes I feel like our girls this age can say, well, I do have validation. You know, this group dropped me. This person said this about me. But to enable them to stop and say, hey, wait a minute, where did that come from? Not what's wrong with me, but where did that come from that this other person is putting on me, can be a really great perspective shift.
It definitely is. And I love questions. The better questions you ask, the better answers you get, right? And so one of the questions I ask my client to ask himself all the time is, in those kind of situations, is what could be going on in that person's life that's causing them to do that? Not what's wrong with me, what's going on in that person's life that's causing them to react that way. And so what happened is you take the blame from you and you kind of remove it out here. But you're not saying that person is terrible. You're saying what could be going on in their life. You're developing empathy. You're developing compassion. And now instead of just hating on that person, you can react a lot different and the outcome can be a lot different. And the other thing I love, like the paper cut, is visuals. I mean, because once you can think of it and remember it, it's just super easy. For my teens, I mean, I work with a lot of teen girls that, you know, again, the teen years are tough and girls can be very mean to each other, right? And one of the things that I teach the teens and my clients is that what people say or do has nothing to do with you. It really is an expression of themselves. And yeah, that sounds great, but it's hard to understand. It's like, how is that about them when they're saying, Jackie, you're dumb? They're calling me out. You know, how is it about them? Again, a healthy, loving person would not do that, right? So first of all, it shows that they're not mentally healthy. The second part is, think about this. Most of us, when we are attacking somebody, is because we feel attacked. We are scared. We're the one that's feeling some sort of way. And whatever that we say and we do is not in an effort to hurt the other person necessarily, but to protect ourselves. So a visual I like to give people is a hot potato. So the person who's calling your name, imagine they're holding a hot potato and it's hurting so much. And all they're doing is they want it off their hand so that they don't hurt anymore. And you happen to be right there, so they threw the hot potato at you. They're not really doing that to take you down. They really are doing that because it hurts so much and they don't know how else to respond. And they're just taking some pressure off them. And when you can see that, it's easier to then not take it personally. It's easier to be compassionate.
As you're telling us this stuff, it's like it's clicking and it's also giving me a visual into why you're able to communicate it to teens. Because like we can talk at our teens all day long and tell them stuff, but like you're giving them an understanding of getting rid of the hot potato, right? Like that makes sense to a teenager. But dealing with, you know, they're not mentally, you know, in the best place, they're like, yeah, whatever. They're being mean because I suck. Let's be honest. But the hot potato makes perfect sense. So it's not just that you're helping people with this stuff. It's that you're speaking the language of teens. And teens are different than us because I think they're just starting to process the emotions. And to me, it feels like a lot of these beliefs really show up in teenage years. You know, for our girls, this is when we see so many of them lose their self-confidence and start to experience friendship drama. And so those beliefs might have been there before, but do you find that they really ignite in teen years and tween years?
Definitely, because, you know, during that year, there's just so many changes I mean, you go from being a kid to being somebody that more people expect certain things from you. They want you to be more responsible. They want you to take on, you know, be more adult state, and then your body change. It just, there's just so much happening. And every one of those things, even the good stuff, right, is the growing up. That's a good thing. But any change is considered a stressful event. And during the teen years, how many stressful events are there? So many. Tons and tons. Everywhere you look, there's more stressful events, right? And again, remember, positive events, still the body still have to respond to it. And this is still a stress response. And so, yes, anytime you are stressed, it amplifies everything else. And every time you're stressed, that's when you're going to lose some of the resources you have, or not necessarily lose, but forget some of the resources you have, because those paper cuts are getting deeper. There are more paper cuts to deal with.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. I didn't think about it from the perspective that even the positive events are still physiologically stressful to us. Mm-hmm. That when our kids are experiencing new things that they're enjoying and they're growing up and things are going well, that's still stressful to them overall.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the life changes, stress level, moving is a stressful thing. Marriage is stressful, you know, a job promotion. Those are all stressful events physiologically. And so, yes, and they compound on each other. And so with a teen, the normal, healthy, growing up, there's a lot of different points of stresses. And then add on the negative stuff, right?
Yeah. So how do you get teens to do this work? Because I imagine that some of them may be like, well, I already know. I know what I'm talking about. I know myself. I know that I'm not good enough. And they might not be willing to kind of get into the work. How do you get through to the teen who's like really ingrained in their limiting beliefs?
That is definitely a challenge, and a challenge that I see a lot with my clients. And the only thing you can do is really invite them and show them resources and hope that they will follow. But hope alone isn't going to be effective, right? So you have to model that change is possible. Because guess what? If your teen is a certain way, they look at you and they see areas that you yourself can change. I hear that all the time. I would talk to the parents, and then I would talk to the teen to make sure that they are ready to do the work before accepting them as clients. And they're like, yeah, I know. But what about my mom? And the list goes on and on and on. If you think I have problems, you need to talk to my mom. Right? The thing is, we forget sometimes as parents, because we're just so focused on helping our children, that we forget that maybe some of the approaches we have, because we know we have good intention, we think is good, but from a teen perspective, it might be controlling. It might be minimizing them. So the first thing you can do is, again, recognize what's going on in you. Those four beliefs are not just in your children. They are in you. Learn to recognize some of the challenges that you're holding. And if you are in a space where you can get help or do the inner work yourself, heal from some of that and share your journey with your children. For some of the teens, it's super easy. You mention to them, they're on board. For other ones, they're like, me, I don't need this. And, you know, you have to work with them a little bit more. And again, modeling is awesome. And the other thing is invite them into micro participation. So if you go, all right, we're going to do this as a family, they're going to go, no, we're not. If you say, okay, so these are some things that I'm really working on myself, because I see I need this, and I think it's wonderful if we can work on it as a family. Would you be willing? Those are the keywords. Would you be willing to give this a go with me? And they're going to go, no. You know, most teens are going to go, no, I'm going to go to my room. Invite them to micro times. Can we just do this once a week for 5 minutes? And even if you don't really want to dive into this book with me, could you just sit there? Can I just read it to you? 2 pages. Can we talk about those 2 pages, right? Ask them for micro commitments and show up consistently with them. Show up in a space that is safe for them to just be, and then to be heard, to be able to express themselves and feel accepted and understood and acknowledged. If you can do those in micro chunks, they're going to start believing in you. Because if they are struggling with themselves, they already created a belief system about who they are and about who you are as a parent. So there are changes that need to happen on both ends.
Yeah. And you are working on the parent companion to I would, but my damn mind won't let me. Can you tell us a little bit about what that offers to families who are willing to put in the work? And I say families because it sounds like each and every one of us within the family should be doing this work because it's really an evolution for all of us.
I agree. If you can get a family to work on it as a unit, the changes would be incredible. The level of connection would just blow you out of the water. This is one of the projects I am so incredibly passionate about and super excited to do. It's been on my to-do list for a while, but I have not committed to it because I just didn't feel ready. And the more I see families, the more I'm like, okay, I'm ready. So I am ready now to actually distill years and years and thousands of clients into this book. Though I would, but my damn mind won't let me. I still look at that as the basic manual to the mind. And, you know, when I write this companion guide, I'm going to ask the parents to start there. Read that book by themselves with their children. And then the companion guide will be, how do you actually apply it? So now that you know they have these four beliefs, what do you do with them? And how do you use that to work on yourself so that you are more present when you are with your children? It would have very solid action steps and activities for the parent to do individually, for them to do with their teen. And I'm working on that how-to guide first, and I would like to also do a couple things along with that. The first one being a journal for parents. And so this is a place for you to really work out things for yourself. This is your own inner work. And then a journal where the teen and the parents can pass back and forth as a way to reestablish trust and relearn how to communicate in a more effective way. So there's a lot of little things I'm putting together, but the whole goal of it is to really to help a parent to understand who they are as parents, you know, the roadblocks they might not see just yet, the strength that they have that they might have forgotten, and then how can they use all of that to look at their children differently and support them in a way that the children need. So I'm super, super, super pumped about this project.
I'm excited too, because I've read and my daughter has read through I Would, But My Damn Mind Won't Let Me. It's really a great perspective shift. And I think it can help our teen girls so much, especially as they go through middle school and navigate those friendship challenges. Because as they start to pull away from us and rely more on that social validation piece, it's so important that they're able to process it. And for us parents to have that recognition of, hey, wait a minute, they do have an idea of who we are as parents. And it's because of actions from us that we might not even know we've done. Yeah. It's important for us to do the hard work as well.
And it doesn't have to be hard.
I did slip that in there, didn't I? That's one of my beliefs. It's got to be hard.
It's not the easiest work because you definitely have to look inward, right? And that's a challenge for a lot of people. But if you look inward in the space of empathy and with kindness to yourself, which is what a lot of people forget, we look inward with judgments. What if we were willing to put the judgment aside and look inward with love, with kindness? It doesn't have to be hard. It can be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Might come more naturally to some of us than others. I'm just saying, but...
It's a learned skill and we all can learn it.
Yes, absolutely. Can you share with us where people can learn more about your work, where they can see the whole suite of books that you offer? Because this is just one in a group of, I think, six books that you have available to teen girls and now available to teen boys that really helps them navigate these mindset shifts and emotions through what are kind of challenging years.
I like that. What are challenging? the easiest place to get a hold of me is shop.jackielatran.com. And do I need to spell that out or will that be in your show notes?
We'll have it in the show notes.
awesome. But shop.jackielatran.com. And if you're on Facebook, friend me. My wall is totally open. I'm just a big old goofy person who just love mindset shift and helping people heal. But I do have 3 books out that are how-to books. The first one is on understanding your emotion and how to let go of those big negative feelings. The second one is the mindset, the Damn Mind book, where it's more of a how-to for your mind. And then the third one is unleashing your inner superpowers. I talk about 7 inner superpowers we all have that if we really connect to and learn how to use our mind, we can overcome all the doubts and fear that we do have. And then each of those books have a companion journal. And like you mentioned, I'm starting to write them for the boys too. I get so many requests for the boys, but my heart has always been for the girls and it's still mainly there. But I know the boys need help too. So I am definitely going to rewrite the whole series for the boys and for the parents because we all can use the extra support.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jackie.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a topic I love so much.
Thank you for listening to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more conversations with experts designed to help you support your middle school girl, please hit subscribe. You can also sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes to receive emails about tips and resources, upcoming events, and new podcast episodes, all designed to support you and your child.